playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the all-new Irish Times Weekend. With new writers like Marion Keyes and Sean Moncrief, your weekend's in good hands.
Good morning. It was Beckett who encouraged us all to try again, fail better. Well, a contestant on Ryan Tuberty's Big Fat Christmas Quiz took this advice to dizzying heights when competing for a prize on Tuesday. Thomas works as a flower seller outside the cemetery in Palmerstown, but he was actually on the M50 on a hands-free set when he took Ryan's call.
Thomas, how do you say Merry Christmas in Spanish? It's the phrase used in a Christmas song. You know the one. You know, there's only one Christmas song that's kind of got a Spanish title that we all...
Spanish title?
Yeah. It rhymes with Feliz Navidad.
Feliz
Navidad. I presume you said that. I think you probably just repeated it, which is actually no use to me. But I think I'm going to mishear that as Feliz Navidad. Pigs in blankets are what wrapped in what?
They're rashers and sausages.
Strike that in reverse, but correct. What colour Christmas did Elvis Presley sing about? You've got to get this. I'll have a what colour Christmas without you?
It's
his colour, Thomas.
Oh, it's colour.
Yeah. I'll have a Christmas without you. It's if you say something rude, what colour would that be?
Rude.
The old days, you say the movie was sort of
crap.
No. It's a colour. What colour is crap? Like, it's a colour. That's Bing Crosby. I'm talking about Elvis Presley.
He wouldn't be a big fan of mine.
Yeah, no, but you might. Yeah, well, you probably haven't heard of you, Thomas. But, hang on. What colour do they traditionally say, and is probably gender offensive, that boys like rather than girls?
White? Pink? No. Oh, God, I'm brutal.
You are, in fairness. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, what colour is the sky on a nice day?
Blue.
Mother, you have it.
You have it tomorrow.
Will we keep going?
Yeah, go ahead.
Name the movie. You're going to need a hand for this too, I'm sure.
Mr. Scrooge, you'll be very merry and happy this day, I have no doubt.
No doubt.
Cheers.
God bless us, everyone.
I'm on hiding to nothing here. Thomas, any ideas?
That's the grunge, isn't it?
What's that?
The grunge.
The grunge. No, it's not... No. Kermit the Frog would be in there. Kermit
the Frog.
That's his missus, yeah. What movie do you think that? What were they called? Did you have a childhood, Thomas? Like, did you what were they called? Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, Kermit, the whole gang were called. Rhymes with Fuppets.
The Muppets.
Yeah, and then the Charles Dickens story about Scrooge was called The Christmas what?
Carol.
Yeah, so put them together.
The Muppets, Carol the Muppets.
Oh, yes.
Dizazzo, but what a great sport. And as St. Larry Gogan would say on his Just a Minute quiz, the questions just didn't suit Thomas. Meanwhile, Ryan soldiered on, heroically, determined to give away the prizes, and all you had to do was leave your pride outside the door and go through the ritual humiliation.
The chocolate toffee finger, the purple one and the green triangle can be found in which assortment of sweets?
Oh, God.
Rhymes with Schmollity Schmidt. Yes. Can you name the Dr. Seuss character that stole Christmas?
Oh, God.
It rhymes with Princh. The Princh who stole Christmas. Grinch. In the film Elf, Buddy the Elf is played by which actor and comedian? Rhymes with Phil Werrell. Right. Take the F and the W and switch it. Phil Werrell. Go.
Take the F and the W.
Yeah. Switch it. So Phil Werrell becomes?
Switch.
Yeah. Oh, you're killing me, lads. I think you're actually...
Oh, Ryan, I'm blank.
Anne, say the words Will Ferrell to me. Just say it. Anne?
Will,
yeah, say it.
Will Ferrell.
Yes, it's the correct answer. I don't know how you did it. Missing word.
From the Ryan Tuberty Show all week. Well, there was competition fever everywhere, it seemed. Over on the live line, Jane Mead thought she'd heard Joe announcing a competition for Person of the Year. So she rang in to nominate her husband of 61 years, Dermot Mead. Dermot worked all his life as a milliner. His family hat business has been on the go for 135 years.
Famous hats your company has made?
Well, we've done Michael Collins's.
Yeah, wow.
There's one for you. We've done the Pope. I've designed the army officers that you see today, the police, naval, customs, fire brigade. We've done the international honours caps for the Irish international football teams.
Wow.
We've done all the racing colours for the royal families around the world.
It's a fantastic story. Now, Dermot, you're not on to talk about hats.
No.
Because we rang you at the behest of your wife, who contacted us, and she said, tell him you want to talk about papal hats, because she's on the other line, and she wants to come on and publicly nominate you for Person of the Year, a competition that doesn't exist. She thinks it does, because of something I said yesterday. And then when she sent in the note, it was just so lovely. Jane Mead, are you there, Jane?
I am, Joe. I am.
You wanted to talk about your chap. He's on the other line. Say hello to him.
You know, Joe, I love him to bits. He's such a good man, really. And but I nearly calf kill him half the time.
So why do you want to nominate Dermot Mead as Person of the Year?
Well, Joe, he's 81 now in February.
Yeah.
And I think I'm 79 now today. And I met him at 18.
Right.
And it is a rough road, you know, in those days. You know, we got married and I had two kids before I was 21.
Yeah.
And, like, as I said, I love the bones of him. I mean, I admire him for a lot of things he's done for me during my lifetime. I had a sister who, you know, suffered a lot, like myself, Joe, from nerves all my life.
Okay.
And nothing else would have got me through, only him sitting down for hours talking to me, a load of rubbish. I'd be talking and he'd be just sitting there. And he got me over a couple of nervous breakdowns.
Dermot, how do you feel? Are you embarrassed there? Are you scarlet?
Actually, I'm just getting a knife out to kill her.
Don't worry, I'll be there before him.
So, Jane, are you beside your chap now?
Oh, I'm beside him here.
Okay,
now.
Well... But see, do you recognise this song, Dermot?
Right. Oh, you're playing my favourite?
What's it called?
When it's spring again, I'll bring again
tulips from Amsterdam.
With a heart that's true, I give to you.
Tulips from Amsterdam.
I can't wait until the day you fill these eager arms of mine.
Like the windmill keeps on turning. That's how my heart keeps on yearning. Till the day I know we can. There'll be tulips from Amsterdam.
You're a tonic, the two
of you. You know, Joe, that's his party piece.
Oh, is it? That's Max Bygraves singing that. Yeah, okay.
From Liveline with Joe Duffy on Thursday. Over on Countrywide, Brenda Donoghue was transitioning nicely into the Christmas spirit. She visited Seary's Pudding Factory in Carlow and joined Brian Seary on the production floor.
Brian, how are you? Lovely to meet you.
Brenda, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming to visit us. This is our intake area. Yeah. So on a given day in the run-up to Christmas, we could be taking in 20 tonnes of sugar, about the same of flour, probably about 30 tonnes of sultanas.
Brian, what a big claim that you're the Christmas pudding capital of Ireland.
Yeah, it's hard to explain to people that in the small village of Tinryland, in the second smallest county in Ireland, that we're producing close to 1 million Christmas puddings every year for domestic and overseas markets. We're the largest importer of sultanas in the country. We are bringing in close to 600 tons every year, which is the equivalent of a container load every 15 days. So if you took all of these ingredients, like sultanas, like butter, like sugar, like the various whiskey and rum that we use, you'd probably half fill Croke Park with it, and that would be our mixing bowl.
Well, in a porta cabin outside the bakery, there's a pop-up shop where Brenda met Vicky. She's a regular customer.
My mother and my grandmother absolutely love the traditional plum puddings, so I buy them here every year for them.
Would your grandmother not be making the puddings, or did
well,
she make them?
Well, she's 90 now, so she can't really do it anymore. Yeah. But she thinks that I make these puddings.
Really?
Yes. I just take them out of the packaging. Yeah, I just scoop them out and put them into an old ceramic pudding bowl I have at home that my grandmother actually gave me. And I tell her I made it myself. And she listens to this programme.
What's your granny's name?
Agnes.
Agnes, I hope you're not listening.
I hope not to.
Yes, the proof is in the pudding. Brenda Donoghue reporting for Countrywide. The volunteers of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul know all too well that Christmas is a time of financial stress for many people. So to highlight their all-important National Collection Day at church gates this weekend, Evelyn O'Rourke was invited along to see the volunteers in action and to meet with some of the families they support. While in Roscrea in County Tipperary, Evelyn met up with Lucia, who has her own special reason for volunteering with the VDP.
The Roscrea volunteers, there are some of them. And there was another particular one made a big impression on you, Evelyn.
That's right, Sean. During the meeting, there was this very impressive woman called Lucia sitting beside me. And she was very clear and concise and direct and funny. And she's a high-flying IT person, happily married, rang her family in the town. And afterwards, when I asked her why she was volunteering, I was really struck by her answer because I thought she might just say, you know, something kind of lovely about her reasons. But she told me that she'd had a really tough childhood and that she still remembers a lovely St. Vincent de Paul volunteer called Nicholas. So here Lucia Maloney outlines more of her very personal reasons for volunteering.
We had a tough upbringing. My father was an alcoholic and he was subsequently barred from the house. We had a Vincent de Paul guy called Nicholas, he used to call to the house. We used to look forward to Nicholas coming every week. I suppose I'm only now realising the significance of Nicholas, the fact that I can remember his face, and he used to take us to a shop over in Ballygall, a sweet shop. There was five of us. As soon as we had the bar picked, Nicholas would say, pick another one. This was Christmas all rolled into one. He was such a kind, gentle man. Never forget him. That's the sole reason why I joined the Roscrea Vincent de Paul.
How are you?
Come on in.
Hello.
I have an advent calendar.
Are you keeping to it?
Yeah.
Every day?
Yeah.
So Karen, I just wonder, what does Noel mean to you? What does the VDP mean to you?
A lot. My mother got them years ago and we used to go to Osmond House to get a Christmas clothes. Then when I needed help, I rang them.
So this Christmas they'll help you?
Yeah. Last year, my washing machine broke and they came out and they gave me help with that. Then this year, my cook got broke and they came out and gave me help with it. Otherwise, I probably still wouldn't have a washing machine, you know. I really appreciate all the help that they give me.
Evelyn O'Rourke reporting for the Today Show on Wednesday. Well, more good news. The Christmas social welfare bonus has been fully restored for the first time in a decade. Paddy O'Gorman was outside the post office in Mullingar as people queued to collect their money. And he spoke to this woman who stopped to pet his dog, Snoop.
Job seekers. I am on job seekers.
What day of the week will you be getting your bonus?
Today.
How do you think you'll spend it?
Well, I love going to church. I'm going to Knock on Saturday. So I want to get my Christmas mass cards. Nice. I'll have masses said for people and I'd spend a good bit of it on that. But I have to say now, like the dole that you give us to live on, it is to live on. And I find if you're not messing with drinking or smoking weed or wanting to go out to cinemas and all this, you can eat very well and you can pay your rent. Like I bought myself a bicycle, a brand new bicycle. I paid off every week and that was from the dole. Like right. That's my transport around, you know. And I manage always every year to get my winter shoes and a winter coat. So I'm like, what more do I need or want?
Did you ever drink or smoke weed?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Which was it, drink or the weed?
Both. And I tell you, if I could turn back the clock, it would be no, no, no all the way. Because it destroys your mind and it just leaves your body, it leaves you an absolute vegetable. You just can't get up and get motivated and get going. But thankfully now that's not part of my life.
Did you grow up here in Mullingar?
I did actually, right. Yeah. The first time I went away, I was 19 years old. I went to England. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all did back then.
In the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, we all did. I went to London and then I was nannying in America. I got drawn into the gambling trade, casinos.
Were you a croupier?
Only on blackjack. I can't say like I was fabulous at a roulette wheeler. I worked a lot in the cash desks over the years, yeah, in many countries around the world. Africa, America, I was on the ships. Right. I was in Israel for a while and Turkey and the Caribbean. I mean, the first 5 years I thought it was great. I was young and energetic. But after that, I could see it for what it was. You were really stripping people, and once everything was taken from them, the doors were shut in their faces.
And are you glad to be back in Ireland now?
I feel so lucky to be here. We're so lucky here in Ireland, so lucky. You know, a lot of the world, they're going hungry. I feel ashamed that I'm not making my own money. But I have to say now, I'm truly grateful and thankful for the system that we have, that they actually give us money to live on.
Paddy O'Gorman reporting from Mullingar for the Today Show on Monday. Ryan Tuberty's interview with the artist Eddie Cahill divided listeners right down the middle. While he expressed regret, he refused to apologise for hurting innocent people during his reign as a career criminal. Eddie says he had it tough as a child. He was 13 when he was sent to Letterfrack Industrial School in Connemara for mitching from school. It was an experience which he says profoundly damaged him. And he eventually joined his brother Martin's notorious crime gang. Martin Cahill, best known as the General, was shot dead 24 years ago.
When Martin was killed, were you surprised he was only 45?
No, I wasn't, because there was people wanted him to stop and he wasn't going to stop. So the only way to stop him was to kill him.
Do you miss him?
I do, of course.
How would you describe him?
Determined.
Well, it was a bullet that stopped him. What stopped you?
Knowledge.
Eddie decided he needed a way out, and while serving time in Portlaoise prison, he came across the Art in Prison project, which was being led by the internationally acclaimed painter Brian Maguire.
The art teacher appears, and it was Brian Maguire. You know, so when I saw him, he was my first point of interest, and I looked at him. He looked like one of us, kind of. You know, that was the first reaction. Yes, I couldn't tell him from the prisoners, because he walked down the landing, heading down to the art class. So that was enough for me, kind of. So I went down and followed him down, and I used to watch them. Jesus, and he was a magician, kind of, with a paintbrush, you know. So I used to sneak materials out of the art class. You weren't supposed to have any paint in the cells or anything like that. I'd paint by my own in the cell.
Yeah.
And then I absolutely just got locked onto it, you know. And that was it. I'd start a kind of 8 o'clock in the evening and stop at 8 o'clock the next morning. You know, I'd paint all through the night.
What was it doing for you?
I disappeared. Mm. People hardly ever saw me, you know, because I'd be working all night, painting all night, and in the daytime I'd be asleep.
Right. I saw some of your paintings. Yeah. They're very beautiful, if I may say so. Titles like Buried Treasure, Living in the Dark, Consequences, Sacrificed, Rising Up. I mean, these are titles that when people hear you talking today have a different class of resonance. And you can buy one of yours for 700 euro up to 8.5 grand. So you've evolved as a talent. In fact, your latest art exhibition, Beneath the Surface, which ran at the Origin Gallery in Fitzwilliam Square, was opened by Justice Robert Houghton.
There you go. All my friends now are High Court judges.
But they are. They're buying your work.
Yes, the world has changed.
Eddie Cahill heard on The Tuberty Show on Thursday. Local tomb historian Catherine Corliss is the woman who carefully peeled back the layers of time to expose one of the most harrowing episodes in the history of this state. Even as a child, Catherine remembers her curiosity being sparked by the 10-foot-high grey stone wall which she passed alongside as she made her way to school along country roads. Catherine undertook years of painstaking, meticulous research, resulting in the discovery of the death certificates of 796 babies and young children who died at the former Bon Secours mother and baby home in Tuam, County Galway. It's believed that their bodies are buried in a disused sewage tank at the site, and a forensic excavation and exhumation of this mass grave will now be undertaken. Well, yesterday, Catherine Corliss was awarded an honorary doctorate at Trinity College in Dublin, acknowledging the academic excellence and social importance of her work. And last night on The Leap of Faith, Michael Cumman asked her about the impact her experiences have had on her own religious faith.
I haven't been to church, as I say, in a long, long time, and I don't intend going back, because since I was a child, I never really got the Catholic faith, what we were taught in school, what the nuns hammered into us. Even as a child, I could see they're preaching one thing, but they're not living it, and they should be. So I always loved the Gospels. I loved the message in the Gospels. But it became apparent to me that the church are not living what they are preaching. I don't know where along the centuries where arrogance and power came into it, because that is not in the gospel of the Jesus that I became to know as a child. When I was a child, I was a bit of a loner, and I spent quite a lot of time walking the fields with my dogs, and I just got in tune with nature somehow, and that's where I found God. I found his presence with me no matter where I went, because when I'm out in the fields, God is with me. When I'm digging my garden, God is with me. When I'm with animals, when I'm with children, God is very much present. And I feel that the church have reduced the Jesus I know and love to, as Mary McAleese stated, a politician and a business person. I really wish the church would go back to the Gospels, to the simplicity. And that you ask the question, have I lost my faith? My faith is in the Jesus who lives in nature and who lives amongst us. And that is the faith that I follow.
Historian Catherine Corliss with Michael Cumman on last night's edition of The Leap of Faith. The abortion legislation made its way slowly through the Dáil this week and is now being debated in the Seanad. But just how realistic is the January the 1st deadline set by Health Minister Simon Harris for the introduction of abortion services in GP practices and in hospitals here? In the Irish Times yesterday, some leading obstetricians called for a delay in the government's plans because of risks to patient safety. Professor Chris Fitzpatrick criticised what he called the government's frenzied attempt to meet a dangerously unrealistic deadline. A question Sean O'Rourke put to Dr. Peter Boylan, the senior advisor to the HSE.
What do you make of the concerns outlined by Chris Fitzpatrick?
Well, I think the introduction of this service is a major change in the Irish healthcare system, and there's no question about that. And it's particularly a change, obviously, in the whole obstetric service and gynaecology service. And doctors and people who are faced with change often have difficulties with that, and that's particularly true with an older cohort. But when you look at what the actual procedures are in doing a medical termination, it's the prescription of tablets. Now, most of those will hopefully be done in the community in the earlier stages of pregnancy. Surgical termination requires a procedure in the early stages of pregnancy, up to 12 weeks, similar to the surgical treatment of a miscarriage, which all doctors are very familiar with. Later terminations then for women with fatal fetal abnormalities and where they're very sick or where there's a threat to their life. That has been going on now for 5 years since the introduction of the Protection of Life and Pregnancy Act. So all of the maternity hospitals are very familiar with the procedures there. Now, if the introduction of this service is delayed, then women are going to have to continue going to the UK for terminations if they have a fatal fetal abnormality, for example. And we heard time and time again of those tragic stories and very upsetting stories. If this service is delayed, that is going to continue into the new year. And women are going to be wondering, what is so complicated about giving a prescription for tablets? There are other issues which...
Well, I think
Chris
he's talking primarily, Chris Fitzpatrick, about what happens in the hospitals.
Yes, indeed.
And he says that in an unprecedented departure from normal clinical practice, we may well have a situation in January in which those of us who are not conscientious objectors may find ourselves under pressure to undertake certain medical procedures for which we have received little or no training.
Well, as I pointed out, the later terminations for fetal abnormality and for protection of life and pregnancy type situations has been going on for the last 5 years in this country. So there shouldn't be any confusion about that or any lack of knowledge about that.
But those numbers, they're very low.
Well, 20 to 25 a year, certainly. So if it's a numbers game, well, then that can be dealt with. I mean, the numbers of births, for example, have declined over the last few years in the country. And the surgical terminations, as I said, is the exact same procedure as women have for surgical treatment of a miscarriage. So that's well within the skill range of trainee gynaecologists, for example, and certainly within the skill range of doctors who've been working for 30 years.
Dr. Peter Boylan with Sean O'Rourke yesterday. Who would want to walk in Theresa May's shoes? She's been hanging by her fingertips all week as the Conservative government tears itself apart limb from limb over Brexit. Joey Jones is a former advisor to Mrs. May. He has no doubt that the withdrawal treaty vote will go against her in the House of Commons next Tuesday night. He spoke with Audrey Carville.
If the vote is defeated, what happens to Brexit? Andrea Leadsom was on radio yesterday saying the default is no deal in the event of a defeat, and yet the Dominic Grieve amendment would seem to suggest that Parliament would then control what happens next, and anything is possible.
There's a brilliant flowchart from hell in the Times today that's been done by one of their journalists, Henry Zeffman, which spirals off in about 1,000 different directions. So it is incredibly difficult to speculate as to what will happen. What is definitely clear is that as the pathway towards the smooth transition that Theresa May thought she had mapped out based on the deal that she did with Brussels and with the with the rest of the EU narrowed, then all sorts of other pathways that seemed not so plausible now open up. So a second vote is definitely there on the table. General election can't be ruled out. Conservative leadership election, there are lots of people circling for a job that you would imagine that no one would ever want to take on right at the moment. But these are ambitious individuals with an eye to the main chance.
From Thursday's Morning Ireland. Meanwhile, in France, security is tight, with around 90,000 police officers drafted into Paris in a bid to prevent a repeat of last weekend's violence, the worst in decades. And all this despite the government's U-turn on tax hikes. Journalist Dermot MacDonald was caught up in the rioting in Paris last weekend, as she told Sean O'Rourke on Monday.
We walked less than a block away from our hotel, which was about 500 metres from the Arc de Triomphe, when we got caught up in one of the many running street battles between the Gilets Jaunes, or the Yellow Vests, and riot police. And the nearest thing I can bring to memory of it was probably at home in Northern Ireland during the late 80s. But it was just frightening just how quickly it happened. Within minutes, we were caught up in a melee. The use of tear gas was extraordinary for that time of the morning, 11 a.m. We sought refuge in a restaurant, which very kindly allowed us in before they shut their doors, and we stayed there for about 4 or 5 hours as we watched these battles. We did make it safely back to our hotel, and it was extraordinary what we saw. Our hotel was quite close to a police station, and young people, not so young people, with hammers, with anything they could take from the area. Cars were burnt outside of our hotel. Absolute random wanton violence. And this was the third week of the protest, but ironically what started out as an online movement on Facebook to protest against fuel prices has morphed into this much, much broader movement. The yellow vests are worn actually under French law. You have to have a high vis jacket in your car. And the movement has now affected parts of the Netherlands, Italy and Brussels. But even though the numbers have contracted over the last number of weeks, the violence has increased incredibly. And it was absolutely extraordinary. We took some video footage outside of our own hotel, Paris in flames, all of those beautiful monuments. And on Saturday morning, I went for a run. It's one of the best ways sometimes to see a city. And I ran down the Friedland Avenue and off to the Arc de Triomphe, and to see that beautiful monument with all that it represents about France and all of its values defiled and desecrated with graffiti. It was extraordinary.
The Irish Independent Business Group editor Dervil MacDonald. The funeral took place of former US President George H.W. Bush last Wednesday in Washington. It was attended by President Trump and four former presidents, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, and his son George W. Bush, who gave the eulogy. The New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd, who doesn't spare anyone in her columns, knew him well, and she spoke with Sean O'Rourke about his political legacy, but also the kind of man he was on a personal basis.
He was a bit wary too of the media. I mean, tell me what happened when you suggested that he might like to meet the editorial board of the New York Times.
Oh, that was funny. That was in a note after he was president. And, you know, you asked about comparisons with Trump. So Trump calls us the enemy of the people and the failing New York Times and fake news. And our editors worry that he's putting journalists at risk. And Bush Sr. was much better about accepting the role of the media, you know, in society. And when he wanted to criticize, he would send me a note and say, boo, editorial page. So that was a much gentler thing. But after he was out of office, I asked him if he wanted to come talk to our editorial board. And he wrote back that he would rather have 3 root canals than ever come talk to our editorial board.
Whatever about that, it's clear that you and he maintained, would it be true to describe it as a friendship, particularly when he was in retirement?
Right. I tend not to use the word friendship or like about politicians because I always think we're the watchdogs, so I hesitate with that. But I would have to say we had a very warm relationship, and it sort of shocked everyone. His chief of staff said it was very odd and joked that we needed couples counseling because he kept up a correspondence with me. I went down and talked at the Bush Library. I went and had lunch with him. And despite my critical columns about his son, I was able to keep this relationship with Barbara Bush and George Bush. And, you know, I think they have their own criticisms of Dick Cheney and their son's White House. So that secretly, often, I'm sure they agreed with me. But we were able to keep a relationship. And they were an extraordinary couple, and now reunited in heaven.
Maureen Dowd with Sean O'Rourke. On Wednesday, Ryan Tuberty paid his annual visit to Arnott's department store in Dublin's Henry Street. But instead of sitting in the window, this time he set up his stall in the porch to meet and greet his guests. Among them, Dhiren Garrahy, presenter of The Dhiren Project, a sketch show where she mimics Irish bloggers and celebs.
The Dhiren Project, which is on the player, and yes, it's number one on the player,
it is.
You'll do Dottie and Maura, right?
Yeah.
And you do a very good Maura. God help her. God help us all. Like, you know, Callan does me, or you know what I mean?
Yes.
So we all get done because we're all personalities.
Yeah.
And that's what
But
happens.
It means you're relevant.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh. Imitation is the best form of flattery. Yeah, that's what my mom always says.
But one I loved, and we played it on the radio, was Saoirse Ronan describing the various words she'd used to get hammered at some awards ceremony. And you went right down.
Fluttered.
The full Keogh, real Irish one, isn't it? I love that one.
I mean, Saoirse would love today.
She'd
the
love
heart
it
of Dublin one. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? She's from Carlow, but really her heart's in, I don't know, the Liberties or something. She loves her Barry's tea and her Tao crisps. Do you know what I mean? She's been all over the world and she'd still choose Dublin one.
She loves Dublin one.
Yeah.
And Roz Purcell has a distinctive. Is that her?
No, I just sometimes it's kind of hard to understand Roz because she just keeps giggling like that. Ryan, stop laughing. Stop.
That is uncanny. That's really good.
Thank you.
So I can see why you're number one. When you meet people like who are personalities, do you think she's going to be so easy to do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some of them are easier than others.
Who's the hardest one? Who's really that you do that's really hard to kind of nail?
Well, Maura Dhiren is kind of difficult because she kind of, you know, she kind of forgets she's from the Aran Islands every now and then, and so it kind of strays back into a Galway, but it's still, you know, South County Dublin vibes.
Yeah, how did she do that?
I don't know.
It's Aran Islands, posh Galway, South County Dublin.
Yes.
All in one.
Yeah, it is. It's a mashup.
It's a mashup. Do you watch tapes or do you?
No, sometimes I'll watch them once and I kind of have it without wanting to boast. But then other times I'll have to watch interviews that they do and just pick up on their tics or, you know what I mean?
So Amy Huberman, another regular.
Well, I suppose really for Amy, it's always about, you know, finding the joy in everything. So it's not really just, you know, Christmas. It's every day, you know, the little things and just not offending anyone and just making sure that we're all friends, you know.
She's definitely getting a unicorn for Christmas, isn't
yeah,
she?
Absolutely, yeah. Or a fairy door. You know those little fairy doors?
Dhiren Garrahy. Well, the actor Shane O'Reilly also dropped by Arnott's on his way to the Gate Theatre, where he's starring in The Great Gatsby. His parents, Susan and Bernard O'Reilly, are both deaf, so his first language was sign language, even though he could hear and speak.
Oftentimes people immediately relate deafness to the idea of disability or the idea of the lack of, but actually to understand it as a language and a cultural uniqueness is far more exciting and far more beneficial, and that's the way I see it.
Listen, after the toy show, I sent a message on Instagram and I said, difference is a badge of honor. It's nothing
absolutely
to be hidden away. It's time to get out of the shadows for this sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. And for me, it's a massive identifier. It's part of my culture, part of who I am and what I'm proud of.
The idea that you're in a house with parents who are deaf, is it a quiet house or is that completely insane?
My partner just went the other day to visit my mum to drop her in a gift and he said it was like World War III.
Why?
Like, because if you imagine if you couldn't hear the noise you were making, Ryan, can you imagine if you couldn't hear yourself? The unfiltered noise.
My favorite sound in the world, my voice.
But my parents, you go home and things slam. The television is on 900% volume.
Do they have it turned? Because your dad can hear a little bit, right?
He can. My dad can hear a little bit. And so, the understanding of volume and the understanding of sound in a house like that is different. It's unique. So, whenever my partner goes home or friends would come around, they would be like, oh, wow, it's pretty loud around here. And there's no kind of cap on the sound. And I was like, that's why I'm so loud.
I spoke to a woman recently on the radio and it stayed with me. Her parents were both deaf like yours, and she said, I don't know what it was, we mentioned Wizard of Oz.
Oh yeah.
And she rang to say that her best memories as a child were watching, she had full hearing like you do, watching the Wizard of Oz with her parents who didn't get a word of it but whose face glowed watching this movie with the kids. In other words, sometimes a movie or something beautiful can conquer the no man's land between the hearing and the unhearing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny, you talk about like art and it connecting with different people and certainly with deafness.
Yes.
I was working with Selena for the first time last year as she arrived, and I asked her would she mind considering bringing sign language into the gate for the first time in its entire history. And true to her word, she did. And now all of the shows at the gate are accessible to deaf audiences.
That's
and
great.
Every show has a sign performance, which is amazing.
Actor Shane O'Reilly with Ryan Tuberty on Wednesday. Over on Arena last night, Sean Rocks was celebrating what would have been poet John Montague's 90th birthday with Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Paul Muldoon. John Montague died 2 years ago, and Paul, along with Paddy Maloney and Trina Marshall of the Chieftains, are hosting a tribute to the poet in Cork tonight in UCC called The Wild Dog Rose.
I went to a school in Armagh City. It was then called St. Patrick's College, Armagh. And it happens to have been the school that John Montague attended himself a bit earlier. But such was the sense of continuity there, really, that we had shared a number of teachers, a remarkable teacher called Jerry Hicks, who was a singer himself, and who actually had worked on some of the last Irish speakers in County Tyrone, not too far from where John Montague lived the early part of his life. And then, of course, there was Sean O'Boyle, also a song collector and a man who introduced both Montague and myself in slightly different eras to the glories of the Irish language and, of course, literature in Irish. And we had a fabulous grounding in Gaelic literature. And, it occurs to me that that actually would inform a poem. It's a translation by John Montague of a piece called Breed O'Neill. Breed O'Neill, no lie that you're lovely. And I know for a fact you've scattered thousands of men. But if you were beside me after all this commotion, sweet-voiced you'd be as on her nest, the wren. Water-falling hair pulled on her nape, gay glanced gleam like the morning dew. Sweet brow and cheeks, hourglass shape, chalk white breasts, veined milk blue. Her purling, curling locks like gold leaf, her tender, slender waist have always arrested me. Her lime white thighs, her rowan red cheeks, whole hosts have been slain by Breed O'Neill. Now, I'm not sure if we would quite get away with that in this modern age, with the objectification, or not exactly commodification, of the female form, but it is a poem that was written for better or worse in the Irish tradition.
Paul Muldoon heard on Arena last night. Brainstorm is a new four-part series of programmes here on RTE Radio 1, evolving from the already well-established RTE Brainstorm. It explores new ideas, insights and thinking about Ireland and the world with a panel of academics. It's presented by Fionnuala Sweeney, and last Sunday evening, Fionnuala and her guests discussed the impact of big data and social media on our lives and whether robots are going to take our jobs.
Professor Kevin Curran, if you've seen movies like Ex Machina or programmes like Humans, it's not too far-fetched to imagine that one day human-like robots could eventually take our jobs. But many people, though, don't realise is that robots have already started taking our jobs. It's just most don't look like humans. How would you assess the situation with robots these days and the impact it's having on our lives?
Economists differ, but the rule of thumb is about 15% of jobs will be at a risk of robotic automation in the coming days again. And we can't stop technological progress, but we can plan for it again. And the jobs which are most at risk is anything where you can do a task-driven and be turned into a script on a computer again. So the ones which are safer from losing their jobs, the people in the creative industries, for instance, including yourself, again, anything which is, requires compassion and caring, nurses are safe for the moment. So we're, you know, elementary teachers as such. But anything at all, like if you were doing something which is, you know, basically accounts or whatever, well then, you know, something can be done by a computer.
Professor Kevin Curran from Ulster University with Fionnuala Sweeney. And you can hear another edition of Brainstorm tomorrow evening at 6 here on RT Radio 1. But I leave you now with music from the band I Draw Slow. They played live for Sean O'Rourke on Wednesday. Gurmaha gavasur goluther, tasulam gurwanshiv salta saglar, agus gmoshivlam taka anamakiana, an tachtan johugin, gijishin, gijishib slan.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer, singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But it don't snow here, you know, it stays pretty green. Gonna make a lot of money and quit this